He's got the whole world
in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world
in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. The little bitty baby. He's got the
from WBUR Boston, I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When little knee-high Ella Jenkins was out playing in the street growing up in Chicago's South Side, she might have never guessed that all that noise, those tunes and rhythms and chants from her play yard would shape her into one of America's biggest children music makers. Dubbed the Lady of Children's Music, she's been writing and singing alongside kids around the world for nearly 60 years. Watching them change with the times. She turns 88 next week, but she still has the ears of a kid. This hour on point, the first lady of children's music, Ella Jenkins, and the music of a child's soul. You can join the conversation. Do you know Ella's sound? Did you listen to her growing up? Do your kids listen to her now? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can comment on our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll talk with one rising star with a more contemporary take on children's music today. But first, joining me now from WBEZ in her hometown of Chicago is the First Lady of Children's Music, Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Ella Jenkins. With more than a half a century of pioneering children's music under her belt, she's released nearly 60 albums along the way. From nursery rhymes to African-American folk tunes to multilingual sing-alongs, her children's songs run the gamut. Her latest album is A Life of Song. Next week, she turns 88, and she's still playing, singing, and learning from kids. Ella Jenkins, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Glad to be here again.
Ella, you've been doing this for a long time. How'd you get started?
In fact, one song that I used to sing is about a long time. I've been picking your cotton for a long time. But anyway, you know, just being a child, growing up on the South Side of Chicago, where you had lots and lots of friends and some of our who were neighbors, and we just get out in front of our houses and we'd sing songs. We'd play one potato, two potato. We'd count from 1 to 10 and make up rhymes about it. That's how it kind of started then.
Many musicians start off by trying to write and play adult music and then find that they have a talent and a instinct for children's music, but that's not how you started.
Well, my uncle, his name is Uncle, I call him Uncle Flood. He came from the South. He came from Little Rock, Arkansas. But anyway, and he worked in the Chicago area, actually worked in Gary, Indiana, in the steel mills. But when he came home, ate his dinner and whatnot, then he'd settle himself into a very comfortable chair, and then he'd pull out his harmonica, and he'd play for hours. And I'd sit down there beside him and listen. This is how I learned how to play the harmonica, just listen to my Uncle Flood.
And how old were you?
Oh, about maybe 8 or 10, you know, eight to 10, you know, and then I went all through the teenage years. He was always playing, yes.
And did you think at the time that this was something that you wanted to do? Did you think it was a path for you?
Well, first, I was fascinated by him because what he'd do, he'd have vests during that particular time. Vests were very popular, 4-pocket vests with pinstripes, and so he had 4 harmonicas. He would keep one in each pocket. And so this is the way he used to relax. And I just said, oh, I'd love to hear him. One day I wish I could play. And so it was nothing that he really taught me out. It's just something I listened to him, and that's how I absorbed the sounds and the feelings.
Have you got your harmonica with you?
Always carry a harmonica. No matter where I go, that's my little portable instrument, yes.
Well, would you mind playing something for us? Maybe something your Uncle Flood used to play? I think you call it the Milk Cow Blues?
Yes, yeah. He just, I don't know how he named it that because nothing about cows, but anyway, it was mostly just
he was not a cow guy.
No.
Thank you.
And he would go on, and sometimes he put words to it, but I used to just like the sound of the harmonica.
And did you learn all that at your uncle's knee, or did you have any formal training on the harmonica?
No, no. I've never had any formal musical training. It's just I'm one of those, a lot of people read music, write music, but I make music, and it's just something absorbs certain sounds, and I think it's enjoyment and what I feel. And so I try to bring this out to people, and to especially to children. Yeah.
We're going to play some more music. Here's a tune off your latest album, A Life of Song. It's not necessarily a traditional children's song. It's Pick a Bale of Cotton. Before you and I remember this being popular from Lead Belly and Sonny Terry.
Oh, Lordy, pick a bale of cotton. Oh, Lordy, pick a bale a day. Oh, Lordy, pick a bale of cotton.
Pick a bale of cotton. Pick a pick a pick a pick, pick a bale a day.
Pick a pick a pick a pick a pick a bale of cotton. Pick a pick a pick a pick a pick a bale a day. Oh Lordy, pick a bale of cotton. Oh Lordy, pick a bale a day. Oh Lordy, pick a bale of cotton. Oh Lordy, pick a bale a day.
Me and my friend can pick a bale of cotton. Me and my friend can pick a bale a day.
Me and my friend can pick a bale of cotton. Me and my friend can pick a bale a day.
Oh, Ella, this is a slave song. What made you choose this tune to open up your album?
Well, you know, it's a good song. It's a song that you can get into right away, and then it teaches a little bit of history as you go along. And so I actually visit my grandmother down in the South in Mississippi, and there was a lot of cotton picking down there. And so my brother and I went down there together from Chicago, and we were fascinated by the way these people would pick cotton. So my grandmother said, "Well, you seem to be so much interested in maybe." So the next day, she got a little bag for each of us, and we went out there to help pick cotton also.
And you fell in love with cotton picking, didn't you?
And your fingers have to be very nimble, so you have to really do it quite a number of times before you get the rhythm.
I picked some cotton. I picked some okra.
Okra too.
It's not my fondest memories, I'll tell you. Your family obviously has had a big impact on you. How much did they influence the music you made?
Well, actually, my mother wasn't. My mother or father, they weren't singers. But it's, you know, if they mother listened mostly to religious music. But what I received was my uncle Flood. His name was Floyd Johnson, and as I said, he came from the South, and so for him to relax himself, he had his harmonica. But many people, I guess, and when he was coming up in the South, played the harmonicas. Many of the men did, at least.
And the music you listened to growing up, what was it?
Well, I heard a lot of blues. I heard a lot of kind of jazz music because I was growing up in different parts of the South Side of Chicago. And so there were a lot of good musicians, and I attended DuSable High School. And so we had a big programs, you know, what they call hijinks. And you could hear some of your best music that was performed in ballrooms and on stages and whatnot. And so this is where I just absorbed this music and never studied music. Music was offered to in school, but, you know, I just listened and participated, but I started creating my own sounds and my own, and then copying a little bit of some of the people that I would see at some of the theaters.
Did you ever have a vision for yourself as something other than a musician? Did you think I might be a teacher or something else?
Well, I thought, I don't know why, but I thought, I am going to be a zoology teacher. Okay. I don't know why.
You liked animals.
And then when they said I'd have to dissect frogs, I said, no, I'm not going to be. I changed my, but anyway, but I thought teaching was it's good because, you know, it's something that you can learn something, and then if you learn it real well and if you're enthusiastic about it, then you want to share it with other people. And children seem to absorb it very, very easily.
Ella, we've got to go to break. We're talking with children's music pioneer Ella Jenkins, and we'll go to break with a little bit of her music recorded by Moses Ash in 1957 on her first album, Call and Response. Here's Ella and friends singing an American Chain Gang chant. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in children's music that makes it special? What do your kids hear? Do you hear the deeper issues come through? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Grammy Award winner, the First Lady of Children's Music, Ella Jenkins, about her long career with children, playing, teaching, and learning music from children around the world. You can join the conversation. Do you like the cross-cultural quality to these kids' songs? Can you sing us a line from your favorite tune growing up? Come on, if you will, I will. To our listeners from around the world, what special children's song reminds you most of home? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm speaking with Ella Jenkins, music educator, singer-songwriter, longtime performer. She's traveled the world for nearly 60 years playing to children, singing in different languages, all with the same messages. Her latest album is A Life of Song. Ella, you talk a lot about how neighborhood to neighborhood, the same songs can sound a little different. Let's compare. From Ella's latest album, A Life of Song, here's Ella teaching children in Chicago two different versions of a familiar song, Little Sally Walker.
Little Sally Walker.
Little Sally Walker.
Kneeling in the water.
Kneeling in the water.
Rise, Sally, rise.
Rise, Sally, rise.
Wipe your weeping eyes.
Wipe your weeping eyes.
And here's the second version, one that you tell the children you grew up with on the south side of Chicago.
Little Sally Walker.
Little Sally Walker.
Kneeling in the water.
Kneeling in the water.
Rise, Sally, rise.
Rise, Sally, rise.
Wipe your weeping eyes.
Wipe your weeping eyes.
Put your hands on your hip.
Put your hands on your hip.
Let your backbone slip. Oh, shake it to the east.
Oh, shake it to the east.
And shake it to the west.
And shake it to the west.
Now shake it to the one that you love the best.
Now shake it to the one that you love the best.
Ella, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing here, comparing the two songs for the kids. What are you teaching?
Well, first of all, some of the children really taught me some of the songs because as I go from one neighborhood to another, children have little different ways of singing these songs. So what I try to do, if I have a song to teach them, I'm really stimulating them to listen and listen carefully. And then if they like the song well enough, they'll try to repeat it and try to sing along with me. And pretty soon, they'll be going and sharing it with lots of their friends, and that's how it keeps going from neighborhood to neighborhood.
you go down a list of songs, your repertoire, and it's delightful how diverse it is. You've got chants from Africa, Mexican clapping songs, yodeling tunes, songs from Hawaii, from Israel. You're a song collector, aren't you?
Exactly. And as you meet people, and people who come from different backgrounds, and many of them want to share some of their backgrounds and through music through either through rhymes or rhythms. And so I'm always latching on to this, and I always have my ear pointed so that I can share some of them. I'll listen to them, and then whatever I grasp, and I try to share it with children.
Here's an example. This is off your first album in 1957, Call and Response. Ella and a 12-year-old girl lead a group of children in an Arabic chant that means welcome.
Hey, Helen, what's that, Helen?
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 Ooh.
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 Ella, what got you out there, traveling around, piecing these tunes from all over the place?
Well, you know, I find this is a way you grow. And you want to grow in many different ways, not just growing up, you know, as people do when they eat and get the right kind of food, but they grow in knowledge, and I feel that I could grow in music, and if the more people that I contact or I'm in association with, the more music I can learn and share with them and their culture. So whether or not I could physically go to this country or that part of the area of the States, But if I meet the people who are willing to share some of their music, this is how I grow.
Well, it's not as if you're speaking a familiar tongue with these kids when we're hearing them sing this song, but they can follow along.
Well, but you know, it took me a long time. I met a young woman from Lebanon, and she was at a YWCA conference. And so she said, Ella, one day you should come to Lebanon. I said, I'm not sure if I could ever come there. I said, I wouldn't know what to say. And they said, well, they'll welcome with like this, Helen, Miss Helen. And so I tried to repeat. So all during the conference, I said, would you say that again, Helen? She said, well, Ella, just pretend that you have a slight cough, Helen, Miss Helen. So I kept saying that, and then pretty soon I taught. But anyway, that was my first Arabic that I learned.
Ella, we have callers who are calling in who'd like to talk to you. Can we take some calls?
Please.
Wanda is calling in from Greenbrier, Tennessee. Wanda, welcome to the show.
Well, hi. Hello. How are you?
Hi, and hello to Ella. I just wanted to say I heard you over 30 years ago at a conference, in teachers' conference in Knoxville, Tennessee, and the one thing I remember about what you're saying, besides giving me a love of music, was, if you can't play an instrument, then the kazoo is for you.
Oh.
We all bought a kazoo and brought it back to our classroom.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the kazoo company should have did something for me.
Oh. That was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. You remember
Wanda,
that.
Wanda, do you still have your kazoo?
I still have a kazoo.
Oh, good. Well, that's great.
And I'm still trying to teach kindergarten kids. In fact, I'm at school getting my room ready right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Boy, that's good.
Kathleen is calling from Newburyport, Massachusetts. Kathleen, hello.
Hi, how are you, Wade?
I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, good. I just wanted to call and say hello also to Ella, but I just wanted to share, back in the 70s, I was in an early childhood major, and first became acquainted with your music and used it when I was student teaching. And then as my career progressed and whatnot, continued to use it with somewhat older kids, even with some younger adolescents. And my favorite memory, though, of your music is with my own children and the kids in our neighborhood, is that we had neighbors who would celebrate Hanukkah and we didn't. And so they would graciously invite us every year over for the holiday celebration, and we taught the matron of our neighborhood, this wonderful woman named Bee, we taught her the song, I Got a Harmonica for Hanukkah. And she was just delighted. And she just thought this is the warmest thing, that she had the whole neighborhood of children teaching her this song. So I just wanted to share that memory with you.
Thank you.
Ella, you remember the song, of course?
Yes. Yes, of course. I would like to hear it again.
Great. Patricia is calling from Huntington, New York. Patricia, hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Oh, good. What I wanted to say to Ella was I was loving the music that you're playing, Wade, to accompany Ella's stories. And what I was noticing was that music is such a powerful tool to reflect culture, but in addition to that, to influence culture. And what's so special about children's music and family music is that we have the power, songwriters who write for children and singers who sing for children, have the power to influence culture because we can educate children before they become full-grown adults, and that we have the power to influence opinion and, you know, really get into their hearts and minds through music because it's such a wonderful teaching tool. Would you agree with that, Ella?
I agree with you full-heartedly, yes. We just cross-section it. We go back and forth. So one influences the other and back and forth, and this is how we learn.
Sarah is calling from Slidell, Louisiana. Sarah, hello.
Hello to both of you, and I would like to thank Miss Ella so much for Mary Mack, all dressed in black with pretty gold buttons down her back. That was my favorite tune growing up in Chicago as a young child during the time we played Double Dutch. Thank you so much for your contribution to children's music.
And I like the fact that she's transferred those silver buttons to gold ones. I think I'd like a gold button one, too.
So her favorite song is Miss Mary Mack. Ella, would you mind singing Miss Mary Mack for us?
At the first version, I guess. Miss Mary Mack, 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 all dressed in black, 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 with silver buttons all down her back, back, back. Well, she asked her mother, 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 for 15 cents, cents, cents. To see the elephants, 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 jump the fence, fence, fence. Well, they jumped so high, 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 they touched the sky, 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 and they never came back, 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 till the 4th of July, lie, lie. No, they never came back, 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 till the 4th of July, lie, lie. And that's the end.
Ella, you said right before you started the first version. Are there other versions?
Oh well, one that I heard was Mary Mack dressed in black, buttons all up and down her back. Hi yo, hi yo, hi yo, hi yo. Give me a nickel, give me a dime. See my honey baby all the time. Hi yo. So, the different rhythm, a different sound, yes. But the story is pretty much the same.
You've gone around the world collecting
children. A lot of different places.
What would you say are some of your favorite memories?
As I would go around different parts, well, one of the places I liked a lot was a country in Switzerland. And I always said there was a place, a special city called Derendingen. And I said, I know a little city, Deren, and I would sing it. There is a little town in Switzerland, and it has a very pretty name, Derendingen, Derendingen. Yes, it has a pretty name. But when I see a new name, and I try to pronounce it, and then if I remember it, if it's something very special, then I latch on to the words or the phrases, and then I share it with the children. And they really have fun just even trying to pronounce these new sounds.
James is calling from Highgate, Vermont. James, welcome to the show.
Highgate. Yes, hi, Wade. So great to hear this program. I'm preparing to teach my very first year teaching elementary school music, and I just love so many of the songs over the years that that Ella has done, and I just wanted to get her advice on what she thought, being this is my first year, what would be a good thing to do on the first day of school with my students?
Well, maybe if you can look up my very first album, and that was made in 1957, and it was at the time it was a 10-inch LP that went into a 12-inch, and the first song was, because I was trying to teach children who were learning for the first time to sing, was Taboo, and it was just like Taboo, and then you pronounce right back Taboo, Ipa, and these are made up tones, native sounds, but this is a good way to have children who feel ill at ease with their voices and not sure whether or not they can sing or not. But so this particular song is Taboo Ipa Iwata Wata Wata Yiga. But each time I say a word, the children say it back to me. But so just made up sounds, and yet right away they don't feel ill at ease with their voices because they're all doing the same thing and making the same sound.
Ella, you use call and response quite a bit. In fact, I believe that's the name of that first album. Is that right?
Call and response, rhythmic group singing. Yeah, that's it.
Talk to me a little bit about why call and response works so well with children.
Well, I think when I used to go to church years ago, and when I used to visit my grandmother in the South, I went to go to some of the Southern churches. There was a lot of that, with the preacher chanting out to the congregation and the congregation saying the words back to him, sometimes the same words or phrases, and sometimes very different phrases. And so this was a communication that people had with one another, so with the children. And so it was like many times when I was in high school, going to see some of the games, the athletic games, you had cheerleaders, and they had these call-and-response chants. And so, what's the matter with the team? What's the matter with the team? The team's all right. The team's all right. Well, who said so? You know, so it was back and forth, everybody. So it was back and forth. It's a nice communication with one another.
And that was part of the way slaves kept going when
exactly.
They were working. They would sing back and forth to each other.
And they had their own communication, their own messages, and sometimes the slave owners didn't know what they were doing, and they didn't realize that they were really planning some things together. But anyways, there was a lot of that kind of chant.
Ella Jenkins, we'll be right back after this break that's coming up. Listeners, we're discussing children's music through the last half century, how it's changed, how kids have changed along with it. After the break, we'll hear from one rising star in the world of kindy. That's right, Kid Indy, Pop Justin Roberts. Here's Ella Jenkins singing her own tune off of her 1995 album, Multicultural Children's Songs, and the song is The World is Big, The World is Small. You can join the conversation. What were your favorite tunes growing up? Do you hear any of those today? Are you wishing for a little less Yo Gabba Gabba and a little more rootsy blues for the kids? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, or is that Yo Gabba Gabba?
You can travel in a name. You can travel in a name. There's lots of room for the short and the tall.
Oh, the world is big and the world is small. So there's lots of room for the short and the tall.
Oh, the world is far and the world is wide. But there are many different ways to see the other side.
Oh, the world is far and the world is wide. But there are many different ways to see the other side.
Oh, do you know the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man? Oh, do you know the Muffin Man that lives in Drury Lane? Let's sing it together. Oh, do you?
This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with children's music pioneer Ella Jenkins about her long career with kids, how they've changed and how they have not changed when it comes to what they're listening to. You can join the conversation. What's in your car playing for the kids? Little Ella Jenkins? Something newer? Are they happily sitting quietly and begging to hear more On Point? Seems doubtful. At 1-800-423-8255, that's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm talking with children's music singer, songwriter, and educator Ella Jenkins. She's had a long career playing nursery rhymes, folk tunes, and new tunes of all kinds. She's turning 88 next week, and she's in Chicago. And speaking of new tunes, I'd like to bring in another voice into the conversation. Justin Roberts joins us, also in Chicago. He's a big name in the world of children's music. With his band Not Ready for Naptime Players, they've pioneered what folks in the business called kindy, or kid indie pop music. Nominated for a Grammy for his latest record, Jungle Jim, he's also, as luck would have it, a big fan of Ella's. Justin Roberts, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Wade.
Justin, let's go to you. We've just heard Ella Jenkins playing Muffin Man coming back from the break. It's a traditional tune. Now, your music, from what I can tell, and we'll hear a little bit in a moment, isn't traditional. Tell us a little bit about what you do and how it fits in with the likes of Ella's music.
Well, it's a little more of a rock band for kids, so it's a lot of power pop and really melodic rock music, and I think the way it fits in with Ella's music is it has a similar appeal to different generations of people. Parents and grandparents enjoy the music, as do kids, and I think that's a commonality. Whether you're playing folk music or you're playing a different style of music, trying to reach a wide audience is something that I think is important in children's music.
Kindy rock, is that a certain style?
I think it's more just meant to mean independent music, not necessarily on a major label, people making music themselves and putting it out. So it can be any form of music. Mine happens to be more based in indie rock, but there are other people doing it in different genres that aren't necessarily indie rock. They could be making jazz music for kids or something, and it could still be kindy.
Any names come to mind?
Well, other people that are doing it are folks like Dan Zanes, who has kind of continued some of the folk traditions that Ella pioneered, and people like Gus Frielegold, who's doing some animation stuff and writing kind of more power pop things like I'm doing, and tons of other groups. There's hundreds I could name.
How'd you get to know Ella's music?
I actually didn't grow up listening to Ella's music. I grew up listening to my brother's Beatles collection. But when I got into playing music for children, which was when I was working at a preschool in the early 90s, I became acquainted with Ella's music and just loved it because it works so well for children, all of the call and response stuff, and just her general spirit is just so contagious. So when I finally got a chance to perform with her in Chicago, it was amazing, and I sort of had this feeling that I was playing with this rock band and we were doing everything to keep everyone's attention. And then Ella gets up there with her baritone ukulele and you could hear a pin drop and there are fathers singing along with their kids. And it was just mesmerizing. So she's a big inspiration.
Justin, we'd like to hear a little bit of your music. It's quite a funny tune, what we're about to hear about growing up, being put out to daydream in the outfield. This is off your 2008 album called Pop Fly, and here is the song, Pop Fly.
Coaches put me in the outfield. Do I even need to mention? It's my job to catch the ball and, more important, pay attention to the pitcher or the batter. Is it the former or the latter? Does it even really matter? When there are dandelions growing along the fence and there's cotton candy clouds that look like elephants and that squirrel up in the trees looking down at me then back up at the sky. cause it's a pop, 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 pop.
Justin, this is a great, great song. Can I ask, does he catch the pop fly?
He does at the end.
Yay.
I debated about that when I was writing it. I almost had him drop it, but I decided it was too depressing, so he does catch it.
Yeah, too reminiscent of all of our own pop fly adventures.
Yeah, I don't think we had the moments where we catch it necessarily, some of us.
Well, I mean, one of the things that strikes me, in addition to, you know, the very fast pace and catchy tune, is it's funny.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think kids enjoy the humor of the songs and really follow along with the lyrics. And I'm sometimes amazed that even really young kids will memorize these rapid-fire lyrics that I write and will be in front of me in a concert singing them back to me. You know, and I'm just like, I'd always been told that children's music had to be very simple and straightforward, but you know, I have 3-year-olds that can sing that song to me, you know, while I'm singing it and make me almost forget the lyrics.
Ella sat at her Uncle Flood's knee and learned the harmonica. I'm interested in how musicians come to children's music. How did you?
I was playing in a band called Pimentos for Gus in Minneapolis, and we were alternative folk group with two guitars and a violin. And I got a job working as a Montessori preschool teacher. And I started playing songs for them and some, you know, traditional kid songs. And then I also started playing like Sam Cooke songs like Cupid and things like that. And then I tried playing this song called Giraffe Nightingale, which is a song that I wrote for the band Pimentos for Gus, but was a fable about a giraffe and nightingale. And it's like 4 verses with no repeating words and no chorus, and I thought they'd be bored stiff. And instead, they asked for it the next day and eventually memorized the whole song and performed it for their parents at an open house. And so, you know, from my experience of working with those kids, I really realized I could almost do anything, and they would enjoy it and take it in, and I didn't have to, you know, simplify things. I could sort of do something that was appealing to me, and kids tended to like it.
Ella, what do you hear in Justin's music?
Well, first of all, it's you know, it has a lot of rhythm, and I think immediately you want to just join in, and whatever his words are, or whatever his phrases are, his rhythms, you want to just join in right away. And I like that flop flop. That was that pop fly. I like that sound.
Pop pop pop.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I write songs, I don't necessarily always know right away how to perform them, but we usually figure that out after the fact. And, I mean, one of the things I've really taken as an inspiration from watching Ella perform is how much interaction is so important in a performance for families. And so there has to be that element when you're performing. And so, you know, with Pop Fly, we have all of the kids making fists and saying pop, pop, pop with us at that point. And I think that
you're not,
you know,
popping a fly, are you?
Yeah.
No.
But I think, you know, that element has stayed the same, is that, you know, keeping the audiences involved and doing lots of call and response things and having them do kind of choreographed dancing things with us is part of the fun of the show.
Ellen, Justin, let me ask you this question. As children move from, you know, the age of 3 and 5 to the age of 8, 9, 10, and 11, you know, these days their heads get stuck in screens.
That's true.
What do we do about that, those of us whose parents who do not want, who want less screen time and maybe more music, especially if they're singing and performing the music?
I mean, I would say that's one reason why I think live performance is so important, and it's so great to get families together and enjoying the music together. You know, like when I see fathers singing along to songs of Ella's with their kids, it's like everyone's together and they're in the moment appreciating music that's being made and fading away as it happens. And I think that's really magic, and I hope that continues and people don't just get too stuck in electronic devices and not enjoying the moment.
Ella, when you first started in 57, there was TV, but nothing like what we have now. What do you know? Let me ask the same question that Justin just answered. I mean, how do we turn our kids away from being spectators and watching things into being performers and doing things?
you could probably have some of this music at home, but sometimes when you're going to church, sometimes when children are going to camp, there is a lot of a variety of places where you can do some singing, where children are singing together and then where adults sing with the. So I think if you like having going on a picnic and having a baseball game, maybe you could arrange, make sure that somebody's organized a little sing-along during the process.
You say sing with them.
Yeah, yeah. So sing, so they can sing along, you know. So they can, yeah. So and many people like to gather new songs, and that because if any of them ever chose to go to camp again or either become camp leaders, they'll have a batch of songs that they can share.
Mary is calling from Boston. Mary, welcome to the show.
I'm thinking about the value and the treasure of music for children much younger than three. The youngest of my grandchildren just turned two, and he has a repertoire of 40 songs in Dutch and at least 100 in English. When he is fussy and when he's tired, we sing to him and we put him down for a nap or for bed, and he sings songs to himself in tune for as much as an hour or more to soothe himself. It's such a he's this little, almost just barely 2 year old, is such a testament to the wonder and the magic and the value of music, not just for preschool children but from birth.
Nate is calling from New Orleans. Nate, welcome to the show.
Hi, Wade. I had a quick question for Ms. Ella and Justin both, now that he's joined the program. My wife is an assistant director at a school in Metairie. It's called Within Reach Center for Autism. And she, obviously, all kids have separate issues, but it does seem that music works in different ways for each and every one of them. And I was wondering, between the two of you, if there was any special children that stand out through your catalog and music career that has helped you, I guess, work towards writing new songs in any way specifically for children with disabilities.
Kids with autism.
Or Asperger's, ADD, ADHD, because obviously from what I can gather that, if you're having a song with an immense amount of lyrics, it can be harder for a child to grasp it as opposed to, say, for instance, the track from her 57 record that's just simply Welcome repeated as opposed to Pick a Bale of Cotton. It would be easier for a child, for instance, that can only say two or three words. I guess the question is, have either of you focused any of your songs towards children with disabilities?
I would say that you would have to be acquainted with the children that you're going to be singing. If you're going to be singing with them, if you're teaching your children, if you're in a class, you should be really well acquainted with the child. So, and then if you're noticing children who are having difficulty, then you instead of breaking it down for the entire class, you could also work with the child. But I think that most children all like to all sing together. And then make sure that you have some songs that are very simple as well.
Yeah, I mean, my experience, I haven't particularly written songs for children with autism, but I have plenty of experiences in different cities of certain fans that have autism and tend to be like really attached to music more so than other fans that are in the audience, and I've gotten to know several of them very much, and the parents have talked about what an awesome power music has had in their lives, much like the other caller mentioned. So I think it doesn't necessarily have to be geared towards children with autism. You know, music itself just has that power. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with the CD by Brady Reimer called Love Me As I Am, but that's a CD that was made with a whole bunch of songs about inspired by working with kids with autism, and that's a great CD.
Margaret is calling from Lincoln, Massachusetts. Margaret, hello.
Hello, thank you. And this is a call of great gratitude to Miss Ella Jenkins. She helped provide the soundtrack of my childhood along with Seeger and Guthrie and Ives. And it's something I think my parents were inspired to sing along with. And through their enjoyment, I have, this wonderful, wonderful memory of a musical childhood. And, you know, through I did a undergraduate degree in human services and then working in the business world and then getting a teaching degree, I am now a Music Together teacher in the Boston area. So who knew that the seeds sown by Miss Ella Jenkins were going to inspire my career?
Oh, what an awful nice thing to say.
Ella, you're 88 and going strong. What's next?
I take one step at a time, one day at a time. But I like life. I enjoy children and their parents and their teachers and their librarians and all of the people who share in making these children a whole child.
Well, kids, I think that's all the time we have for now. I want to thank my guest, Justin Roberts, Kindy Rocker. His latest album is Jungle Jim. Thanks for joining us, Justin.
Thanks for having me, Wade.
And Ella Jenkins. She's had a long career playing music of all sorts for children, and may it continue for many more years. Thanks so much, and an early happy 88th birthday, Ella.
Thank you very much.
We'll go out with another tune. This one is from the 2004 tribute album to Ella, Celebration. Here's the University Park Children's Ensemble singing Sing Me a Song Again, Ella, and we wish we all could. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Wade Goodwin, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.